Greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, this is AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and I'm the net control operator for the LIMOC technical net. LIMOC technical net has been going strong for over 43 years. Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and chat with each other and entertain each other and inform each other, educate, learn from each other, and I thank you all for coming back again this Sunday night when we do it all over again. Let me drop for a second and I will give you the usual link. The first link, obviously, is going to be my mail bag address. If you want to reach me, you can't do it through Peter, then the best way is email. The email is basically for what we used to call mailbag questions. If you have no access to the repeater during the technical net, you can email me the question, and if it sounds interesting, we can discuss it on the next technical net. You can either listen to the audio stream live, either through EchoLink or through the audio stream that we provide, or you can wait until it's posted to an archival site and download the file and listen to it at your leisure. Also, if you have any topics that you would like to discuss, you can email me and ask if that would be okay. We always look forward to people with a special knowledge of technical things in the news to share it with us. Also, if you have any good technical puzzles, so we're looking for things that will really kind of stimulate conversation and thought, and hopefully not something that could be answered by simply Googling it. I tend to prefer TechNet puzzles where if you Google it, you get the wrong answer. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and pass on a question about something that you saw space or NASA-related on the Internet. Of course, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. But my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, every week I cut and paste interesting articles. We got a load of them this week that hopefully we'll talk about as the night progresses. The announcement of a room temperature superconductor, possibly. Some guys got together, some really crazy guys got together in Congress, and they brought some other crazy guys outside of Congress, and they talked about UFOs last week, so maybe we'll talk about that. But you can find the list of linked pages to stories by just typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. That'll give you Roy's link. We keep the links live 24/7. And they go back years and years and years. We have a chat room available. Lately it's been kind of quiet, but sometimes it gets kind of rowdy. So if you're interested in checking out the chat room, just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. That'll bring you to the chat room. And as I mentioned earlier, we offer an audio stream of the technical net. Let me drop for a second so I don't time out the repeater. Okay, we wouldn't want to time out the port repeater. If you want to listen to a live stream over the Internet, if you're not near a radio, we have a stream available. I set it up for the TechNet, but after a while, people asked me if I could keep it live the rest of the week. So if you type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, that will give you a live feed through the Internet of whatever is going on in Glen Oaks repeater. And I always like to remind people of my KC2NJI. He has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. He has archives of the LIMOC technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So there's a lot of wisdom in those recordings. A lot of people who unfortunately either moved away from the area or passed away and became silent keys. So their wisdom is kind of frozen in bits on that website, so please check it out. Let me drop for a second and I'll be back with our plan. We will ask the audience for any questions or topics or comments for discussion. We will ask them pretty please if they have amateur radio related subjects to mention it and try and go first, because we would like to start the technical net with amateur radio related questions. But as most people have figured out by now, we will address any science or technology topic that's brought up as best we can. And hopefully, if we can't give you some insight, we can at least suggest some reference materials. That should go on until about 10:15. At 10:15 call, WS2N will bring us the SpaceNet report. That'll take us to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on it and wish you all well. So that's the plan. If the laws of physics continue to be the way they are, and my shack and the repeater don't misbehave. So with all that in mind, let me drop and ask if anyone has any questions or topics or comments for tonight. Please hit that push to talk. Give me your first name and your call sign.
Saying hello. I haven't spoken to you in a while, Roy. KD2OGB.
Hello, Craig. I heard you kind of check in through EchoLink. You were, I guess, vacationing.
That was... Yeah, I think that was last Sunday, I believe. I don't think I was listening on the net, though. I think I was listening to something else.
Okay, it was a free country. You checked in before the TechNet through EchoLink, and yeah, I didn't see you on EchoLink during the technical net, so, you're free to do whatever you want to do, Craig. I assume this was just a hello that you don't have a topic for tonight.
No, not right now.
Okay, well, once again, I remain AC2GS. This remains the Limark Technical Net. So we're looking for questions or topics for discussion or comments for tonight. So if you people out there have something, please hit that push to talk. Gosh, you guys remind me of the 10-meter net that I had this morning. Once again, propagation was not terribly good. There were a few conversations being held on 10 meters. But they were kind of one-sided. I couldn't hear the other person. I think one was in Florida that I was able to hear. So propagation conditions continue to be kind of quizzically not particularly great on 10 meters. And most of the net is involved in talking to local people. Once again, I realize that these are the summer months. People have all kinds of interesting ways of taking vacation time and not really thinking about radio nets, but hopefully there's a few of you out there who remember that it's Sunday night after 8 o'clock and have some questions or comments tonight, because otherwise it's going to be a real short net.
Well, we certainly don't want a short net. You might as well toss me on the top then.
Okay, Craig, consider yourself on the top. We'll see if we can cajole anyone else. Again, we have a couple of interesting topics that usually TechNet regulars kind of gravitate towards. We have the room temperature superconductors, supposedly. We have a very weird congressional committee discussing UFOs of all kinds of things. And some other things in the news. So we certainly have a bit of stuff to chat about. I see here on my IRLP link that John from Los Alamos is connected. I'm curious whether the guys he works with, Los Alamos, what their opinion of the Oppenheimer movie might have been. So we certainly do have grist in the mill. We just need people to throw the grist into the mill. Anyway, once again, this is AC2GS. If anyone has any topics for discussion, questions, comments, what have you, hit that push to talk and give me your first name and your call sign.
W2BC, non-ham radio.
Okay, Rich recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down tonight? Okay, I'll take that as a not right now. I mean, in addition to the other things that I mentioned earlier, our least favorite astrophysicist, Avi Loeb, got himself in hot water. There's a whole bunch of people yelling and screaming at everything he looks at. He sees little green men. So that might be a topic for discussion. I think I have it included in my link someplace. Anyway, first on our list for tonight is Craig. What's your comment, your question, your topic, or what have you tonight?
Here's a little something odd for you. So I'm using my, I recently picked up a UV5R, an actual newer one that's ham band locked. And I actually programmed it via chirp, and it always tells you that the drivers are always updated and they're not always the right, that they're not always the right thing. I'm like, okay, good. So after programming it via chirp, and I waited for everything, so I unplugged the radio from the cord, and I hear my computer say, oh, my radio was removed, okay? But then as soon as I remove the cord itself, I'm listening to music, it freezes, and my computer blue screen deaths on me.
Okay, I mean, some drivers are better than other drivers, and some drivers are better at detaching resources than others, so it's not bizarre that dubious driver under certain circumstances trying to release the resources, release the wrong resources, and you know, you get the blue page.
That surprised me at first because I haven't had my computer blue screen in quite a while. I guess probably because it didn't know what it was thinking of with the USB cord, and plus when I plugged it in a couple of times by itself, it kept saying it wasn't recognized, but then as soon as I put the radio in, then it recognized it.
Well, yeah, it sort of depends on how the manufacturers work it. Sometimes they'll have the converter chip on the adapter itself, so when you plug it in, it sort of knows what it's supposed to do. Other times, the actual processing, the signals get processed in the actual radio. So you need that radio connection completed before it's fully realized. So it's just a matter of manufacturer's choices. I've seen both types of configurations go.
It seems pretty odd at first. I just wanted your opinion on it.
Okay, I mean, blue screen is very rare, as you mentioned. For the most part, it happens to me, depending upon the computer, sometimes a couple times a year, sometimes once a month on a bad. Usually I have this one computer that for some strange reason, it also has a Thunderbolt dock, which Lenovo has never been able to quite get right. And so when there are massive upgrades to Windows 11, invariably when it boots up for the first time, it blue screens, because I think it's kind of interacting poorly with the Thunderbolt dock, because my other computers don't seem to have that phenomena. But I remember more than a few times when they released the next version of Windows that they said they're doing away with the blue screen, and yet it always seems to be around. So I hope it doesn't happen to you again. I mean, it's very possible this is a kind of one in a thousand thing. Hopefully it isn't that the drivers are just so terribly written that they have a consistent problem releasing resources back to the computer itself and producing errors that simply cannot be dealt with other than just going blue.
Come to think of it, actually, here's another time that this happened to my computer, and it actually wasn't really a BSOD, it was more of a hard lock, and I remember when I had an old motherboard, it would usually do this once in a while, but this was like maybe in like, I don't know, 3 to 4 years since it last did this. But a hard lock, basically the entire computer freezes, like the mouse freezes and any programs, like, for example, my NZXT cam that shows like what my CPU is doing, my RAM and my load is, that all freezes and your mouse freezes and your keyboard and lights still work and everything, but nothing responds in the computer. Like everything is frozen and the only way to do it is to forcefully shut it down or just do a soft reset.
Yeah, that's a software error, not a hardware error usually. What's happened is way close to the kernel level where the input outputs and such are being dealt with, the loops that operate them get stuck someplace. Either they get on a perpetual external loop or they're waiting to get some kind of acknowledgement signal that gets lost, and then everything locks up. The hardware is fine, so the power gets fed to everything, and everything that's supposed to be illuminated is illuminated. Anything that's supposed to be spinning is spinning, but you can't get into or out of the CPU because the I/O stage is screwed up. So yeah, the best assault for that under those circumstances is to pretty much reboot the computer one way or the other. At that point, there's no real interface that's going to work anymore other than the soft reboot or the hard reboot button that goes before that. But yeah, that's a kind of awful thing to get stuck in because invariably it's a perfect opportunity for configuration files and such to get corrupted, and then you got to deal with that sometimes. It's always good to power down your computer the normal way. I'm sure there are still people out there, strangely, who just pull the plug on the cord or something equally absurd. But it's never a good idea. It's always good I always kind of freshen things up even before a technical mess. I hit that restart and reboot everything, clear all the caches, and get ready for business.
It's usually hard for my computer to shut off on its own unless the battery that I have hooked up to it, it's at 40% capacity, a little over. Probably because I have like things like Discord and Roblox once running. I'm actually playing a little game here, but I'm just sitting around doing nothing, waiting for the place to freeze up. looking at on my computer, and I don't really see it to be concerned, but my RGB fans, they're still spinning. One of them on the back is still spinning, but the light is kind of like glitching, and it's like not really providing the right light that I want to. The only thing I could think of, maybe it's just not plugged in all the way, or maybe IQ is not knowing what to put on it. Even the top fans are doing that too. The side fans are fine. It's just glitching out with the light, but they're still spinning though.
Okay, well, I mean, that's the most important thing. That is not quite as pretty as it should be. At least you won't burn out anything, whereas if your fans go, it's very possible to overheat these processors and get yourself into more trouble. I mean, if you're very lucky, as you mentioned, it's probably just a contact problem. And the first thing that I would do under those circumstances is disconnect, reconnect a few times. Just the action of doing that is going to scrape off some of the corrosion, the oxidation of the pins and such. It might be a faulty chip that's running the controllers for the LEDs. In that case, it's going to be more of a nuisance. But I would certainly just try to clean up the connectors, and that you might be able to get away with just that, and it will work again.
Yeah, Roger. Tabby, you can get out of here. Thank you. Yeah, I guess I could do that. I'm probably not going to really do anything. I'll probably just leave it alone. I mean, I still have Windows 10. I haven't upgraded to Windows 11 yet. And considering how the MSI 960, my video card, isn't really made anymore, I could... Wow, thanks for random killing me with that sword there. I'm watching my game. At some point, I would like to get myself maybe a new video card, a new CPU, and a new motherboard, and then probably see if Windows 11 is worth it. I've looked online, and it turns out 128 gigs of RAM usually would be like 600 to 700. It's as low as 300. It's amazing with how prices of chips have been going down a little bit there. KD2OGB.
Well, I wish you good luck on the upgrade. It's always nice to freshen up. Make sure that you your power supply, though, is capable of handling it, though. Modern-day graphics processor boards require a lot of current. So, you know, check out what you're using as a power supply. You may consider upgrading the power supply with the other components as well. You know, it's always nice to freshen things up.
My power supply, I think, is like 850 watts, and I'm probably only putting out maybe 500 or 600 because on my battery tower it says I'm only up to like 40% capacity. And it's pushing out 119 volts, I guess, out of the outlet as to what it's measuring. And it's on AC power. But yeah, everything in my room here is on a battery. I actually have two batteries plugged into the wall, and my computer and everything is plugged into it. And it actually just went down to 30%. It just went down a bar. So I guess it's saving a little bit of energy now that I just shut off one of my programs. What's kind of cool with this battery, and I probably have told you this before, the moment you unplug it, it instantly switches over, actually. So, like, your computer won't even power down or, like, shut off. It'll just immediately switch over. It's so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, UPSs have that mode that they might glitch for a fraction of a second. Some things blink, some things don't. Depends upon how the power supply and how good a capacitor is in line that takes up the slack. I've mentioned before, I have a power gate. It's called from radio, I forget what it's called, but it's called the power gate, Epic power gate, and it has multiple sources. I have one input hooked up to the power supply, another to the battery, and another to the load. And the idea is that should the power supply fail, it'll switch power to the battery and keep my IC7100 running. And when the utility power comes back on, it will switch over back to utility and charge up the battery until it's fully charged. And it takes lead acid, it takes lithium iron phosphate, it takes a whole bunch of different types of rechargeable batteries. So it's you know, it's always fun. It's interesting how the switching can be done in a matter of milliseconds so that most electrical equipment does not perceive the gap. So it's, you know, it's very nice how they're automated that way. So, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, Roger. At some point, when I do get these new components, I could probably keep my video card. I think upgrading it really is unnecessary. There's one my brother used, but I don't really want to toss that in my computer because I kind of would like to get a little bit of money out of it. I mean, I could. It wouldn't hurt to. But I do want to eventually get a new CPU and a new motherboard, and I also want to do another fresh, clean install. I mean, I kind of still want Windows 10. I don't really want 11 yet.
Okay. I mean, I have Windows 11. It's nothing special. There's a couple of aspects, actually, that's worse than 10. The taskbar is still not quite as flexible as it was in 10. The next big upgrade, according to Microsoft, is going to be around September, October. It's going to be, you know, they have updates that they were doing at different intervals. They were used to do half-year intervals. They still do have minor bug fix upgrades. But the big feature-rich update is just once a year in the third quarter. So expect that to pop in around September, October time. But I could certainly understand sticking with Windows 10 for the time being. There's nothing much, in my opinion, that you gain. And there are a lot of older computers that have less, they lack the TPM 2.0 security chip hardware device that apparently you need to upgrade to Windows 11. There was a lot of people with older computers that were very upset when they tried to do the update and it failed because they just don't have that security chip.
Trust me, eventually everyone's going to have no choice but to upgrade to Windows 11 because I guarantee you they're going to drop Windows 10 support and not give any tech support, just like XP Vista and 7 and 8. So, unfortunately, it's only a matter of time. I'm going to make my bed and get ready to hit the sheets and also want to talk to the mother for a little bit. Thanks for the chat, and yeah, I didn't really want this net to go so quiet. 7-3 is net control, AC2GS, KD2OGB.
AC2GS, well, thank you, Craig. Have a good evening. Yeah, eventually they will drop support for Windows 10, but probably by then there'll be Windows 12. My guess is they're not going to do a Windows 13, because if they were kind of antsy about not doing a Windows 9, you can imagine how superstitious they are if it eventually comes to Windows 13. That's just a disaster waiting to happen. So we will follow the course of Microsoft. Most of us have kind of committed to it. There's a bunch of Apple people out there. God bless you. But thanks for participating tonight, Craig. Have a good evening.
No problem. And don't jinx it. I'd like to maybe stay with 11 for the time being. But for now, I'm keeping 10.
Okay, very good. Next on our list tonight, Rich W2BZ with a non-amateur radio-related question. What is it to be, Rich?
Good evening, Roy. Good evening, everybody. Years and years and years ago, I read a book called In the Matter of J. Robert Oppenheimer. And it was about the trial. I think it was a transcript from the trial of his trial, but for the life of me, I can't remember why they put him on trial. Do you know, Roy?
I assume you're alluding to he lost his security clearance and he fought the government. He was working as a consultant, I think it was maybe 15 years after the atom bomb was exploded. And the powers that be decided that his history in the 30s of associating with communists caused him to lose his security rating. So I think that's what the case was. He was trying to have the security access reinstalled in his name.
Okay, that does ring a bell. That does ring a bell. It's amazing that here was a guy who was the head of the Manhattan Project, and all of a sudden they felt he was a threat. Was that just in the, in that 50s roundup of anybody who ever even thought of the word communist? Was that due to McCarthy?
It wasn't directly related to McCarthy. There were people in the Atomic Energy Commission that didn't like him. So it was a kind of combination. I mean, part of it was the general paranoia of the American public against anything. You have to remember that during the Los Alamos Project, Manhattan Project, actually, to one degree or another, the Soviet Union was our ally. They made a sharp 180, and they were the enemy. And he did have a protracted history when he was younger because communist parties and anti-racism and a lot of moral injustices were kind of bundled together. And that's, I think, for the most part, how he got involved. I don't think he was a deep economist. I think it was more of a case of those were the organizations that were kind of pointing a bright light at racism and other factors. And it was enough fuel for the people who didn't particularly like him to use as an excuse to kill his security clearances.
Fascinating. fascinating, huh? Fascinating. Is this movie out already? Do you know, is that what it's about? Is it about him losing his security clearance?
I don't believe so. I think it's primarily involved with the bomb. I haven't watched it yet. It's on my list of things to do. It's 3 hours. It's a very long movie. But I don't think it takes up much, if any. You know, they might hint at it towards the end, but I don't think that that was the point. It's taken from another book. It's called The American Prometheus, which I'm reading. So far, so good. We'll see how it goes. Again, it's a very long book.
Where is the Oppenheimer movie streaming now, or is it just in theaters?
No, it's just in theaters. They're trying to kind of maximize their profits, and they're doing very, very well. It's not, unsurprisingly, it's not quite doing as well as Barbie, but it was. I think they've made, I haven't looked this weekend. I think last weekend it was something like $110 million, which is pretty good. Hopefully this weekend is not too far low below that. So they're doing very, very well. I would be incredibly surprised. I think they're going to stream it in about a month or two, but I could be wrong.
And who's playing Oppenheimer, do you know?
Well, unfortunately, he's not a well-known actor. He's an Irish actor. He had a major part in one of the Batman movies. I don't quite remember the name. It would require much to look it up. But he has a very close appearance. He's a very gaunt gentleman with high cheekbones, very much like Oppenheimer had. Of course, there are crazy people out there, so I saw some newspaper or website that suggested that everyone was an anti-Semite because they chose an Irish actor to play a Jewish scientist. We live in weird times.
Now I remember who he is. He's the guy who starred in the great, great Irish series called The Peaky Blinders. He was a gangster in the Peaky Blinders. Now I think I remember who he is.
Okay, his name is kind of difficult to pronounce correctly, but it's Cillian Murphy.
Intuition.
Yes, Wesley.
Can you send me for ham radio question?
Certainly.
Thank you.
So anyway, the guy who plays Oppenheimer, and a lot of people are pronouncing that Oppenheimer. I don't know where they picked that one up from, but his name is Cillian Murphy. He has a unique face. You know, you wouldn't confuse him with anyone else, as far as I'm aware.
No, he's a great, great actor. Great actor. I can't wait to see that. Okay, Wesley, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I just finished my antenna. I had to exchange my coaxial cable. Remember, a few times we had a problem. How am I coming out, Dr. Ray?
Ah, you sound fine tonight.
Okay. So, tricky question. Which antenna works the best? Quarter wave dipole, half wave dipole, full wave dipole? Dr. Roy, do not answer. I know you know the answer.
So, Wes, you're asking the audience?
That is correct. That is correct. Okay, it looks like the audience doesn't answer. Dr. Roy.
So now you want me to answer the question?
Well, because the audience doesn't respond.
Okay, I mean, very often the audience doesn't respond. So what was the question again? You're talking about center-fed dipoles, and you had three center-fed dipoles, and your question, I guess, was which works the best? I'm not quite sure. I think you said one was a quarter wavelength center-fed dipole, another is a half wavelength center-fed dipole, and I don't remember what the third one was.
Oh, we have a regular dipole antenna. One wire left, one wire right. One is quarter wave, one is halfway, one is full wave. Which one works the best?
A standard half wavelength dipole has a quarter wavelength to one side, a quarter wavelength to the other side. That's probably the best. You can have harmonics of that. You could build longer ones. It will still radiate. It won't quite radiate with the same radiation pattern that a standard centifed half-wave dipole. If you have a half-wavelength on either side, that's really not going to work well because the resonances are all wrong. So unless you have some kind of strong massive impedance modifying balance transformer, you're going to have an infinite impedance in that line, so that's not particularly good. So the tried and true is a half-wave dipole, quarter wavelength elements on either side.
You weren't coming good. I'm not sure what's happened. No, my antenna works good. So I couldn't understand very much. So you say half wave is the best, then is quarter wave, then is full wave, right?
Half wave center fed is the best. Quarter wave is too short, full wave is too long.
Okay. And if you look at the quarter wave and a half wave, at the end of the wire, is the voltage there the highest or is the lowest?
It depends on whether you're resonating it. If you resonate it, you can electrically, component-wise, resonate it at any length, and then the outer aspect will have a highest voltage potential, and the center-fed line will have the highest current.
If you have a full wavelength and you're looking at a sinusoidal signal and you connected the generator to it and use it as the amplified transmitter, TX. Now, if you look at the sinusoid on the paper, you see that the upper part is a half wave and the lower part is a half wave. But if you cut vertically the upper part on half vertically, then you have a quarter wave, right? Now you take that part that is growing up and put it on the antenna. On the quarter wave, you have a higher voltage, the highest voltage at the end of the wire on each side and the lowest at the middle. Actually, I have a good video showing that. Now, if you take the half wave, you may have a similar situation, but if you take the full wave, now what's happening is it doesn't work at all, because it cancels each other. Because now you're taking for full wave you have a two half wave, one left, one right, and those half wave, you look at the sinusoid on the paper, they cancel each other, because upper one is positive and lower one is negative. So full wave doesn't work. Right or wrong?
Unless you correct it with an electrical component that changes the phase characteristics. That's why people are able to get away with non-resonant, mechanical antennas that are corrected by electrical components.
So you're introducing the phase change. In other words, it will come with little delay. Can you describe it better?
Well, like we've talked many, many times before, most of the antennas that we hams use are called standing wave antennas. They resonate back and forth. They bounce in phase, not out of phase. So the idea of a resonant antenna is a state where you can establish a resonance or standing waves that don't lose any internal energy and radiate them out into space as RF. So theoretically, if you're going to practically use any of these antennas, they better actually be resonant in some way or another. They don't have to necessarily be mechanically resonant. You can correct for the mechanical non-resonance by introducing phase shift so that they operate as though there's some multiple, odd multiple of a quarter wavelength on either side, so that the wave can kind of bounce back and forth and back and forth without interrupting negatively the reflections and killing the standing wave phenomena. So functional antennas that are resonant operate for the most part using standard standing wave situations. So you have to get a phase correction so that the waves always are in phase with each other as they reflect back and forth internal to the antenna before they radiate into space.
If you could send me some material about the full wave dipole, I would be interested to read it. In the meantime, I'm going to send you a... Hold on.
Okay, your signal kind of broke up towards the end of that. I don't know if I have anything in particular. For the most part, people don't bother to do that. There's no particular benefit. There's always a benefit in shrinking an antenna because it takes up less space, it's less heavy, there's less mechanical and geographical restraints. It doesn't work if you go the other direction. If you make an antenna unnecessarily long, it doesn't really benefit you much. So there's next to no one who, I think, would really deal with a full wave center-fed dipole with, you know, you probably need something like a 49-to-1 lossy transforming balance to get the impedances anywhere near right. So I would doubt that there's a lot of literature on the subject.
Okay, for me, half wave doesn't work and cannot work. But if you say introducing phase shift, I gotta go deeper into it. It's interesting. Now, you're absolutely right. Half wave works the best. Quarter wave, little less. And then, if we want to choreo left side and the right side, it's going to work as well. The only thing is that the efficiency is going to suffer. Back to you.
Okay. I mean, going back to the old thing, the best, you'll get probably the best efficiencies by having a mechanical resonant structure. If you start to introduce mechanically non-resonant structures and then correct them with electrical components, you will increase the Q, you will increase the insertion losses, it'll become a less efficient radiator of energy. But again, because it's valuable to many people to have antennas that are much more compact, you know, if you're getting using an HF antenna in your car, you don't want a full-size mechanically resonant structure because you won't be able to move it too far. So you buy a very inefficient thing like a ham stick where it's a short radiating element with a large loading coil that's very inefficient, and you suffer a antenna with efficiencies of as little as less than 1%.
I agree with that. Okay, so it was like entertainment. Nothing special. We have that superconductors, but I believe it's not the time yet. So let the other guys talk about ham radio, and then eventually we can touch it if you feel like. What do you think?
Yeah, we can do it later. It just depends upon what kind of action I can talk people into now. But yeah, we can put it on the list of things to chat about later, and I'll ask if anyone has any questions or comments for the time being.
Okay. So, yes, it's probably going to be about 9:30 whatsoever. If I do not respond when you call me, it means I'm working on the antenna because it's still not finished. Thank you very much, and to XGN.
Comment.
Yes, please, comment.
Ed, K2GJE, if you want to put out a full wave antenna, don't feed it at the end. Don't feed it at the center. Feed it a quarter wave off one end. They work very well. Over.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Yes. How could I... Yeah. What do you think, Dr. Roy?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you shift the feed point, it changes the equation entirely, but that wasn't what you were asking, so I didn't really invite that. That's one of many ways where you can transform impedances by shifting off of the center. The center of a dipole gives you the lowest impedance. As you shift to either side, it goes up. So, yeah. There are other ways it's going to cap.
But now there is a question. You have three quarters from one side, you have a quarter from one from the other side. How do you balance it?
Not quite sure what you mean. It's no longer a balanced antenna because of that. So it's always a good idea to put in a balun just as an RF choke type of situation. But, yeah, it's no longer a balanced antenna by definition.
Yeah, JG, could you respond to this?
It's a low impedance point now. You could feed it with a one-to-one balun. Over.
Yeah, but the point that West seems to be making is that it's no longer a balanced antenna.
So what?
Yeah, that's my sentiment. It's just not a balanced antenna. You deal with it.
And what would be the impedance like?
You would have a nominal, 50 ohm impedance at that point.
Are you sure? You're feeding the full wave such a way that from one side you have a quarter, from the other side you have a three-quarter. And you say you're going to have a 50 ohm?
I'm not sure. I'll ask Ed. You might need a balun to kind of transform it to 50 ohm impedance nominal. I offhand don't know what a off-center fed full-wave antenna's impedance is. What would you say, Ed?
One side is going to be a quarter, and the other side is going to be three-quarters. Three-quarters is a quarter plus a half. The half acts as a one-to-one repeater. Over.
Okay, so you're basically saying it's going to have the same 50 ohm impedance.
Correct.
Okay. Again, I don't really know if there's that much of a benefit for amateur radio operators, because most of the guys that I know are always looking to get the biggest bang from the smallest size antenna. They're trying not to make it excessively oversized.
Most of us are short for space, and very seldom probably would we do this, but it doesn't take too much on 10 meters or even 2 meters, I guess, to do it. I did it in Europe, when I lived in Europe, on 20 meters, and I spoke to the east coast of the United States every night on a regular basis. Over.
Okay, but I mean, what would be the additional benefit off of a standard center fed? Is the takeoff angle any better?
The reason I wound up with this antenna was the distance between two chimneys. So I said, why not try and make it extra long and feed it a quarter off. Over.
Okay, so that makes sense. You simply you had mounting places that optimally would give you that size length, and so you went with it just because it was easier to do that than to do a smaller one and do ropes as extensions, I guess. So, okay, that makes sense. You're very noisy right now.
How about now? Am I noisy?
No, you're a lot better now.
Okay, I think so.
Okay, very good. So I guess hopefully we'll get back to you, Wesley, a little bit later to discuss the room temperature, normal pressure, superconductor, maybe. Again, I am AC2GS. This is the Landmark Technical Net. If anyone has any topics for discussion or questions or comments or what have you, then please hit that push to talk and give me your first name and your call sign. Well, we're going to be pulling teeth here tonight. Don't know what to tell you guys. We'll see what happens, what develops. Once again, let's give it another good old try. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Landmark Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m. to discuss technology, hopefully amateur radio-related technology, but other forms of technology as well. You're all welcome to join us and ask questions or make comments or bring up things. That's what we do tonight. So if anyone out there has any questions or topics or comments, please hit that push to talk.
Justin Michael Chata at K2GJE.
Yes, Ed.
Sometimes, especially this summer, very hard to receive WV, but the Canadians have something like our WWV that gives time. And they give it, I think, in French and English at 7850, by the way. And the other ideas or question that I'm interested in, there's a lot of people broadcasting, but not in English, on 9-plus megacycles. I don't know why they do that. Are there actually people in South America or Europe that listen to these programs on 9 megacycles? I don't know. Like 9330 is one, 9395 is another. I don't think any of them are in English. Just curious, when listening around the frequencies over.
Oh, okay. I mean, if there's anyone out there that can answer Ed's question, there's a lot of strange things that if you don't listen closely, you don't notice. Someone pointed out that if you go ever so slightly out of the CB 11 meter range, there's a number of transmissions from south of the border. They're pretty much all Spanish-speaking conversations. And I'm equally a little bit unsure of what's going on there. If South America has access to a little bit of the 11 meter band that they use. But if anyone knows anything about these and can shed some light on it, then feel free to hit that push to talk.
K2SDP.
Yes, Chris.
Hey, Roy, good evening. I have a friend who is of Mexican descent. He's from Mexico, and he's told me that those are cartels, and that's how they communicate.
Geez, I almost wish I had paid attention in Spanish class. That would be interesting to know what they were talking about. So do they really want to broadcast that over the radio? Aren't there more secure means to communicate when you got lots and lots and lots of money?
You know, I brought something similar up, because I don't know Spanish, so I said, what are they saying? And the answer was, they really don't say anything that you would understand, even if you spoke perfect Spanish. So they speak in somewhat of a code, and unless you know their code, you don't know what they're saying anyway. But I can't confirm that, because I don't know Spanish at all. I barely know English, as you know. K2SDP.
Okay, I'll have a little bit more interest the next time I hear their transmissions, even though I won't be able to figure out what the hell they're saying. I mean, that kind of brings me back to the old number stations that I think are still around that are pretty much believed to be just five radios. They're encoded numerical messages. you think, you know, guys who are passing, you know, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars of illegal drugs to the port, the latest, greatest encryption technology that they would have to kind of go back to those old days that, you know, if you ever remember the movies that had monsters in it, once they figured out that phones could be tapped. You know, they would talk somewhat circuitously. They would say, the dig, we gotta pick up the dig. You and me, we gotta pick up the dig. You know the guy? You know the guy from church. We gotta do something about the guy. So rather than kind of say exactly what they were talking about.
Yeah, understood. But I think it's actually more intelligent than you think. And part of the problem is they're talking to people all over the world that may not have access to any sophisticated equipment. So as long as they can get a ham radio or some other receiver that gets those frequencies. So he claims that they're kind of announcements. They have like a radio station and they make these announcements. And people all over the world are listening and that's where they get instructions or whatever. But, you know, who knows? But he's not a crazy guy. I mean, he doesn't make the claim like it's outlandish. He just stated it like that's just the way it is. And, you know, I can't confirm it or deny it. I don't know the legitimacy of it, but it sure sounds it.
Okay, I'll have to pay more attention. It didn't strike me as a radio broadcast. It sounded like two guys having a chat back and forth. You know, there'll be other things as well. You never know. But okay, well, I'll keep that in mind the next time I'm wandering around past 11 meters.
K2GJE?
Yes, Ed.
Years ago, when I had a shop in Manhattan, we sometimes used to ship some items out of the country, and that requires a special know-how in doing the paperwork, and we use an exporter, and he did all the paperwork, and all we had to do was deliver the crate to the pier in New Jersey. And one time he got a request from someone in South America that they needed some very large electrolytics, very, very high voltage, and he asked me if I could help him out. And at that time, Radio Row existed, and I found them for him, and we made some profit by just turning them over. Just a side story, over.
Okay, very good. I just missed Radio Row. I was a relatively sub-teenager, I guess, when they wrecked the whole place and built the towers, at the end of Manhattan. So I missed that. All I've heard was stories of what once was.
It was a very interesting area. There was a lot of military surplus there. There was a man called Mr. Leeds that if you were like a high school student and you didn't have the money, he would put it aside for you until you paid it off, over.
Oh, that was very nice of him. I get the idea. It was sort of a labor of love. I find that for the most part, there's not a great deal of profitability in the business end of our hobby. You could make a living, but you don't get rich. And I think a lot of the people who are still around are kind of doing it out of love of doing it. You know, I don't think if Mr. June decides that he's not really up to doing MFJ anymore, I have this sad thought that there might not be anyone who would be willing to take his place, and it would be kind of broken apart to about 10 different odd businesses. Most of them would go out of business by the end of the year. So, you know, it's nice to hear stories of guys like that in the past as well. It's a dying art. For the most part, business is getting to be very business-like, you said.